Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, we did it. Our first week is in the books at the brand new Digs. And as I said before the show started, this Friday's show is going to be awesome. And it was. Just ask Josh in Detroit, who you will hear from later on in this edition of the Daily Jungle. Plus, the cat is back. Back in the swear jar, dropping four-letter bombs all over daytime programming in true vintage form. Plus, Jungle favorite and Sixers head coach Brett Brown made it in. So did Zay Jones of the Bills and Rosie Nix from the Steelers. But before we get to any of that, let's get it started with my take from last night's game in Dallas. Starting with last night's matchup. After getting stomped by the Falcons, the Eagles, and the Chargers, and failing to score in double digits in each of those games, the last thing the Dallas Cowboys could afford last night was another nationally televised beatdown. Lose to Washington like that in prime time, and we may have actually seen Jerry Jones get so overheated that he goes full Raiders of the Lost Ark face melt. Fortunately, though, for Jera, the Cowboys, and TV viewers, we never saw that in that 38-14 win because the Cowboys and their running game finally showed up and because Washington did not show up at all. I know the Redskins are banged up, but they played like a team that had something else on their mind or someplace else that they had to be. They didn't bother getting off the bus. They played like their season was already over, and now it is. In fact, the first quarter could not have looked any worse for either team or for the sport of football. Dallas, three and out, followed by a Washington punt, followed by a Dallas three and out. Washington manages to put together a drive, only for a pass to clang off the hands of Jamison Crowder and into the mitts of Cowboys safety Jeff Heath. But yet again, Dallas could not do anything about that, and they punted. And then yet again, Crowder could not give it back fast enough, this time fumbling the punt. What a brutal night it was for him. In that sequence, the last two times he touched the ball, he turned it over. Then Dallas recovers on the Washington 43, and surely they'd be able to get something out of this, and they did. 1 yard on three plays, and then they punted. At that point, it was clear Washington could not give that game away fast enough, and Dallas just did not want to take it. That first quarter was as ugly as any in the Cowboys' losing streak. They couldn't run, they couldn't pass, they couldn't do anything. Fortunately for them, they were not playing Atlanta, Philadelphia, or Los Angeles, teams that will make you pay for mistakes. They were playing Washington, who was happy to match them mistake for mistake. But then something changed. Dallas forced another punt. Dak Prescott went to work, and he finally found Jason Witten.
Second and four at the eight. Pistol formation with Morris right behind Prescott and trips left and a read option fake. Throws it in the end zone. Touchdown to Witten right at the post. Right past the ear hole of the safety, DeShazer Everett.
That's what changed. Washington, that's Dallas radio. Washington fumbles on the next drive. Dallas gets a field goal, and then on the ensuing possession, Washington punts, and then the wheels come off completely.
Fourth and seven, and Tress Way punts it away. Ryan Switzer on the back pedal takes it at the 17, up to the 25, right into the middle of the field. The 40 broke the tackle. Switzer to the 50. This might be the one for Switzer. To the 20, to the 10. Ryan Switzer with a somersault into the end zone. 83-yard punt return for a touchdown.
Switzer with the dagger. 17-0 Cowboys. And the way that Kirk Cousins was running for his life again, there was no way Washington was getting back into that game. It doesn't mean that he didn't try. He did. And if you have any doubt about this guy's toughness or had it before that game, you shouldn't anymore because he was getting absolutely hammered and he just kept getting up and throwing punches and making plays. Hey, look, I'm no expert. I'm not going to tell Washington how to do their job. But if you think that you can find a better quarterback than Kirk Cousins, then you're lying to yourself. And even if you did, he'd probably get killed behind that mash unit of an offensive line. I don't know how they think they can do better than this guy, but they can't. Take care of him. Get it done. But again, it was not about Kirk Cousins or about Washington. It was about Dallas and Dak, who had played through a jacked up hand, and Jason Garrett, who coached his way off the hot seat, at least for a few days. And of course, it was about Jera. Because trust me, if it's about the Cowboys, it's about Jerry Jones. It's always about Jarrah. And even if it's not about Jarrah, Jarrah will make it about Jarrah. And he was ready after the game with whatever you needed. Did you need or want a medical opinion on Dak's hand? Jarrah's got that. You could tell, quote, you could tell that it was very swollen. It actually looked like he started throwing better after it swelled up. But that's him. He's such a competitor, and his team knows it. He's a leader out there, end quote. All right. Hey, Jerry, how about a full analysis of the game and your team's playoff chances? Oh, he's got that for you, too. Quote, you're talking to a dreamer. So, yes, it's not hard for me to look the way we played, the way we answered the bell, the way we answered the bell in the second half with the players we've got. We do get Sean Lee back by all measure, and we will have all players back as we look ahead. Any of these teams in the NFL can beat you, but I think we've got a good chance as I look ahead. Certainly no further than our next ball game, but we've got a good chance to be better after this game, end quote. Hey, look, I have no idea what he actually meant with that word salad, but I'm guessing he's not feeling lower than a crippled cricket's ass. For one night, he and his crew did not get embarrassed on national TV, and he's happy about that. Hey, listen, this is not a matter of them saving their season because they still have almost no chance whatsoever to make the playoffs. It's not a matter of them saving their season. It's a matter of them keeping their season alive, which is more than I can say for the Redskins. But they did what they had to do. And the good news for the Cowboys and Jarrah, that was not another nationally televised embarrassment or beatdown. They look like the Cowboys for a night. Their head coach, Brett Brown, is my guest. Brett, it is so good to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you?
Brett, I'm great. I can't wait to get caught up with you, so let me just jump right into it. You dropped a tough one to Boston last night where you were playing your third game in four nights. You were without the big man, Joel Embiid. Facing Boston is tough at the best of times, but especially given those challenges, Brett, what did you make of the way your team battled last night for you?
I mean, I was proud of our guys. You know, there are games that you leave and, you know, you point to sort of structural things or execution things. I think from just a competitive grunt, and you need every bit of that in Boston to not have Joel. And we also miss TJ. You know, I was proud of our guys. I think you always learn something at this stage. They are the league's royalty. You know, they're the league's best. And I think just from a competitive standpoint, we fought, you know, we were there.
You know, Brett, that's interesting what you just said, that they're the league royalty. They're the league's best. I've heard you talk about them, that you've got a lot of respect for them, and you're always looking over your shoulder at them. What do you see in them as a team and an organization that you like and respect so much?
I think the fact that they have grown their program, you know, in some ways, like we have been trying to do, they're probably 2 or 3 years ahead of us. But I think that there's been a discipline in relation to how they've tried to grow it, you know, after the trade of Kevin Garnett and company. And, you know, you're always paying attention. We do have respect for them.
Brett Brown joining us. You know, Brett, you and I in recent years have talked about growing your program. And now it's December 1st. And if the season ended right now, I know that's kind of a ridiculous thing to say because we're months away from the season ending, but if it did end right now, you'd be in the playoffs and be this close to hosting the first round. You've got two incredible talents in the making in Embiid and Ben Simmons. You've surrounded them with a lot of other talent, and there's a ton of buzz about this team in Philly and around the league, and you've worked really hard for this very moment. You and I have talked the last few years about this very moment, so I've got to know, how is life for you right now?
Well, it's true what you said. You I have spoken every single one of my years here. And, you know, the path that you've, you know, sort of seen everybody go through has been interesting. I think for the fans of Philadelphia, it's where I see it the most dramatic. They're so rabid and they are so passionate that it just spills over into the streets. You feel it, you know, when you obviously get into the arena. I find it even when we go on the road, there's like a mini cult following with Joel and Ben and the process and all that stuff. I think for me personally, just the, in some ways, gratification that we're slowly growing a culture. You know, I feel like the pieces behind whatever that our soul solid. I think they're real. I'm proud of the way we work. I think there's a professional discipline when we come into our new building. We got a brand new practice facility over the past year that certainly helps me do it. And I've been able to hold my coaches. You know, there's a beauty when you can coach the coaches and help spread the word through multiple voices. And I can sort of see the world from a cloud and delegate a lot and just manage from that perspective. And those types of things come into my mind if you said, well, if the season ended today, what do you think?
Sixers head coach Brett Brown joining us. You know, that, and then in Simmons, he had 15 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds last night. Wednesday, he went 31-18-4. We're only 20 games into his NBA career, and he already looks like a superstar. Now, initially, there may have been some skepticism about him as a point guard, but the truth is, Brett, you were a point guard at South Portland High School and BU. Your son Sam is a point guard as well. You know what it takes to play that position. What did you see in Simmons that made you say that he could do this at the very highest level?
He had a mentality. You know, he really had a mentality. Every time I saw him play, when we really started digging in once the ping pong ball fell and we realized we were going to choose first, and you went overboard with studying him. And I assume, you know, we've talked before, like I coached his father for 17 years. I've known Ben before. I've known Ben's family since before he was born. And so when you follow sort of the pedigree and you speak to his junior coaches, and then you gut feel when you see him play at LSU, and I see it with my son, you know, you watch young kids play, like 3 or 4 people always come back for the ball. And Ben did that as a foreman at LSU. And you started seeing, well, once he actually did get the ball and he sort of pushed the point guard aside, like what did he do? And he had a mentality to want the ball, mentality to pass. He's got a vision line that's very unique at 6'10", and he's got a breakaway speed that contradicts somebody that's 6'10". You know, and I think the conversation gets a little bit funky for others when we said we're going to make him a point guard, and then you drape his size over it. It sounds funny when you say, well, he's 6'10". And he has not let down at all. The growth of his position sort of, you know, time, score, the mentality of the position, intellectual side of the position is an evolution. But to date, Jim, like, he's been really, really good.
Sixers head coach Brett Brown joining us. I mean, the speed that he has at 6'10", the handle that he has at 6'10", I can only imagine what that does for the entire offense. Brett, you touched on this. I mean, I could talk to you about the upside of Joel Embiid, but in addition to that, he's got that electric personality. And you know how Philly sports fans are and how much they want to win. So when he's firing up the crowd at the Wells Fargo Center and they're chanting MVP or trust the process, and to your point, not just at home but on the road as well, what's that like for you? How does that feel?
I mean, I think it's great. You're always trying to educate these guys on, you know, walking that line of respecting the game, playing with an edge and a spirit. I like our guys playing cocky. I like them playing with an edge. And I really don't want to water any of that down. And, you know, Joel, you know, he's got a sort of mischievous side to him. There is a confident side of him that gets everybody going. And, you know, by and large, I think he walks that line of, you know, respecting the game, making sure that everything is directed toward helping him and his teammates and us. And I think he's fantastic. I think he's very good for the league. And how about, you know, his skill package at 7'2" and the variety of ways, you know, defensively for sure, but offensively, you look at him, you know, dunk, he can be Shaquille O'Neal. He can come down and be Dirk and hit a 3. He's a high percentage free throw shooter. You know, he's got sort of up and under moves when he gets to the post, a little bit like Hakeem Olajuwon did. It's really hard to say, you know, he is this player. I think he's a cumulative sort of examples of a bunch of those guys that I just said, which is obviously elite company.
you know, for whatever it's worth, Brett, and what's my opinion mean, but I've never seen anybody like him. In terms of the whole package, not just his skill set and his size, his charisma, his personality, his social media game. I mean, I've never seen anything like the guy. I love him myself. Before I let you go, now, J.J. Redick has said that one of the reasons he signed there was because of you. In fact, you're one of the biggest reasons. And then there's one story after another about how you poured an amazing amount of time and effort into guys even like Darius Johnson Odom. He played a total of 15 minutes on a 10-day contract back in the 2013-14 season. He has not played in the league again. A lot of coaches may have looked at somebody like that as disposable and not worth the investment of time, but you don't. Not with him, and generally speaking, you don't. How come?
I mean, I think it's the bloodline of the program. We when I took this job, you knew immediately you had to be A-plus in development and you had to be A-plus with relationships. And they're very interconnected. And it's something that I enjoy. I like going into a locker room. I like knowing my guys. I like knowing their children, their wives, their family. I like trying to figure out what makes them tick. How do I best help them? And I think when you see the world sort of through that lens, you learn quickly that everybody in the locker room, my staff, the program, et cetera, can be benefited where they know they work. You can hold the locker room together. Internally, they feel like they're getting better. And development and relationships rule the day. And, you know, it's easier, Jim, when you're coaching 15 guys. I think if you jumped into NFL situations, that massive number, I'm not sure I'd be, you know, I don't know if I'd be that good a coach in that world. I like a small number. We like trying to make it a team. That stuff matters. And, you know, we spend a lot of time trying to be good in those areas.
Now, yesterday I told you that Woods was not back. Because he's not. Inviting yourself to some fake 18-man tourney in the Bahamas in November is not the same as running down a green jacket on a Sunday in April. And yes, I am aware that he came out and he posted a 369 yesterday. I'm also aware that 10 of the other 17 players carded that same number or better. So no, he's not back. But here's where I will concede something to the Tiger Honk Nation. Tiger Woods, the 14-time major winner, may not be back, but Tiger Woods, the FCC violating rage lunatic who drops four-letter bombs bizarrely in the third person, is back, and he's back in a huge way. Took this sailor less than one round of televised golf to hammer a 35-foot putt 10 feet past the hole and go all third person GD with it.
Tiger.
Easy cat. Alvin, for those who missed it, let me be very clear. He went third person GD with it.
Tiger.
Tiger. GD. Hey, Cat, no need to rush all the way back. Only 11 holes in. Easy, big fella. It's a non-cut event. You've still got the weekend to be a terrible role model. I mean, you wanted vintage Tiger? You got it. That was vintage Tiger. Because the dude has been wearing out dump buttons for a long, long time on tour. If you don't believe me, why don't we just take a moment and dust off some of the classics? And if it sounds like every one of these clips was recorded off of somebody filming their TV, it's pretty much because they were. It's not like the PGA Tour is going to archive these lowlights in HD.
And Tiger on the tee, the hole in the upper back right quadrant. Fuck! I don't think he's pleased.
No, Tiger. Dumbass. Tiger. Tiger,
God. Oh, well, no more commentary necessary.
That made my commentary look pretty mild.
Golf clubs, get this guy a swear jar.
Baseball bat, get this guy
a swear jar. You gotta love the world's most famous athlete, who's followed around by a herd of cameras and microphones for 5 hours at a time, playing the world's quietest game where the crowd is literally commanded to shut up. And he's playing a gentleman's game. And you got to love that guy going all Jim Rome podcast on basic cable in the middle of the afternoon. And is there anything more baggy than going third person with it? Yes, yes, there is. It's called going third person with it with a nickname. I mean, one thing if the cat were like, Eldrick, you suck. But he's out there self-glossing in the third person. Self-glossing in the third person. That'd be like me messing something up on the air and then raging into the microphone. Van Smack, you bleeping mother bleep. Drew Jumpman, you piece of bleep. Gee damn it, Romy Rome. But there's your guy, Honks. There's your guy back in vintage form, cursing himself in the third person on live TV while everybody watches. Welcome back, Cat. The FCC Christmas Fund has missed you.
God, Tiger!
Going third person GD with it yesterday. Tiger GD!
Back right quadrant. Tiger once.
Suck!
Hit me up, Albie, with one from yesterday. Tiger GD!
Tiger.
Bro, you invited yourself to this event. It's an exhibition. And Tiger Honks are like, see, he hasn't lost that fire. He hasn't lost that fire. It's like Sunday at the Masters. No, it's not. It's nothing like Sunday at the Masters. Isn't that the whole point? It's nothing like it. Stop self-glossing in the third person and beeping up the joint. Oh, he's back, all right.
Jesus Christ.
There's a JC blast for you, too. GD, JC, anything else? Are there any of the Ten Commandments that my man hasn't broken yet? The 11th, bouncing your rig off a tree. The 12th, taking a 9 off of your grill. Zay Jones is my guest. Zay, it's great to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, boss. How are you?
Doing great, man. Great to talk to you. Listen, you've got a huge game coming up on Sunday against the Pats, but I got to go back to last Sunday against Kansas City. You're on the road. You're in a hostile environment. It's a loud stadium, and you had lost 3 straight, Zay. So what was the team's attitude and mindset going into that game?
Yeah, our team just had a very resilient attitude. Hats off to the Chiefs. They're a great team that we played, but we came to play as well. Our defense did a phenomenal job. Really proud of our offensive line and LeSean and Tyrod Taylor leading us. So just a great team win. Glad to get that on the road.
Now you got things started with that 11-yard TD reception in the first quarter. It gave you guys a lead, which you never relinquished. Can you take us through the play? What did you see, and how good did it feel to start the scoring off the way that you did?
Yeah, really that play started with the offensive line and Tyrod. It was kind of a naked keep play. Tyrod kind of escaped the pocket and was able to keep the play alive. And then I kind of weaseled my way to the back of the end zone, and Tyrod was able to find me a nice clean throw right on the end zone. So, I mean, it was just a great play by us as a team. Good little play to get us started. And then, the group team win in the end.
Listen, as much attention as you received for that touchdown, you received even more for an incompletion. Dude, this thing's amazing. I can't wait to ask you about this. With over 5 minutes left in the second quarter, you and Tyrod Taylor just missed hooking up on a deep ball. You hit the ground, and then you seem to magically levitate off of it and back onto your feet. The internet absolutely freaked out at that point with people saying that you were possessed or you're from another planet. First of all, what do you remember about that play and how you did get back to your feet?
That was a deep ball that, me and Tyrod just missed. And the funny thing was, I was upset about the incompletion. And, people were so amazed by, like, this little move that I did, this little maneuver. And then I later checked my phone, and then some of my friends and family were like, yo, you're trending everywhere right now. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, what did I do? But, that funny little levitation move, that's something that I've done as a young kid through college, and I even have done it in past games. It just had never been seen before, and then I guess it just finally, someone caught a glimpse of it, and it just went viral.
Again, let's be real clear about this. It went viral, and you were trending, and everybody was going crazy, and it was over an incomplete pass. I mean, I got to tell you, I've watched this thing maybe 20 times, and I still don't understand it. It looks like a video game glitch.
Yeah, that's what everyone is compared to, a video game, like you said before, Jim, like I'm possessed or like this looks crazy. But that's just the way it happened, and it was so funny because I had no idea it had really taken off like that until later that night and then early that morning. I was like, wow, this is everywhere.
It's everywhere, and it's in your own locker room. And again, if people listening have not seen this, you need to go find this right now so you know what we're talking about. It then sparked the Zay Jones Challenge, where some of your own teammates like Micah Hyde and Shady McCoy were trying to replicate the move. Did any of them come close to getting it right?
I think the closest one was probably Tre'Davious White did a really good job of it. Everyone else was a little suspect. They couldn't really get it down, but it was just funny laughing and crack jokes with my teammates. And really, for anyone who hasn't seen it, they should go check it out and then, you know, send the videos, post your video doing it.
Dude, that's smart. I like that a lot. Check it out and then post your own video. Zay Jones joining us. Now, you had that absolutely monstrous career at East Carolina. It included setting the FBS record with 399 receptions for your career, but making the transition, and I don't care who you are, making the transition from college to the pros is never easy. What's that transition been like for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, it's not easy. It's difficult. And anyone who's come in and dominated this league at a young age, I really have a newfound appreciation for what they've done because it's hard, man, that transition. It's been difficult, but I had some great teammates and some great veterans that helped me along the way, as well as my coaching staff, Jordan Matthews, Brandon Tate, Andre Holmes. The list goes on, the guys that I've really had around me to just help bring me along. But starting to get in the hang of it, starting to get in the flow of things, and I'm really just enjoying playing for this team and this playoff hunt.
You know, it's not unusual. Again, it's a challenge for anybody coming in. Now, you've pretty much established yourself as a starter already, but of course you're not going to dominate right now like you did in college. From the outside, it seems like you haven't lost any confidence, so how do you maintain that focus and that confidence when things don't come as easily necessarily as they have all along?
You know, it's something that I began to just live by, even through a little bit of my college career. It's never too high and never too low. You're going to have your poor days and you're going to have your record breaking days, but you got to treat those days both the same. You can't let the negatives get to you too much, and you can't let the positives of trending and doing all this great stuff get to you as well. So it's just knowing who you are, the type of player you are, the type of person you are, and just being consistent in that sense. And the rest is going to take care of itself. I'm not really too worried about the numbers or anything like that. The most important thing is winning. It's helping this team win each and every week, and my game will progress as I get more and more experience.
Buffalo Bill, wide receiver Zay Jones joining us. You also come from a great, great football family. Your father, Robert, is a three-time Super Bowl champ from his time as a linebacker with the Cowboys. Your uncle is Jeff Blake, the former Bengals quarterback. And I had your brother Caleb on the program a few years back after a big game in Arizona. And we even talked about you and how proud he was of what you were doing and how he'd lose his voice yelling at the TV when you were playing. So what was it like growing up in the Jones household?
It's something truly special, and something that I don't take for granted. I understand how unique it is. At a young age, I didn't. I thought everyone's father played in the National Football League because that's just what I was used to. But now I really understand how special it was. But it was a competitive household. I mean, not only in just sports, but everything that we did. My brothers and I, we always wanted to compete. We were trying to bring our sisters along too. They're athletes as well. And it's just something that we could all cherish and all something that we loved. I remember watching Sunday football with my brothers and my dad, critiquing games, basically just extra film study, really. And that's just the household we came from, and I love them very much.
Now, you're in Buffalo, and the team is battling for a playoff spot. You've got that huge game coming up this weekend. See, I've done this a long, long time. I've been to Buffalo. I've had an affiliate in Buffalo. I've got a pretty good understanding of that Bills fan base, but I don't play for that team. So I've got to ask you, what's it like to live in that town, play in that town, and what makes that Buffalo Bills mafia so unique?
Yeah, well, I'm a rookie, so I'm new to it too, but Buffalo family has really adopted me, and I'm getting the sense of our culture and what it means to be a part of this team and what it means to to carry that one buffalo across your chest. It's a great sense of pride, great sense of history. Just knowing all the great players that have come before me, I honor that. I respect all the things that they've done. And that just motivates me even more to go out there and carry on the legacy and tradition to wear these colors. Their fan base is second to none. Truly special. They show up week in and week out. And we can't do it without them as well. So, I mean, this entire town, this city is really growing on me. Something that I take great heart in. And I'm proud to play for this team. I'm proud to be a Bill, and I can't wait to go out and just continue to do the things I know I'm capable of doing.
We're all loose on a Friday. What the hell? What could happen? Let's go to Josh in Detroit. Josh, it's good to have you on, Josh. What's up?
Romy, thanks for the vine. You know, maybe I should volunteer for that Tennessee job. I'm a pretty good Madden player, Rome. Let me bury the hatchet on this topic as well. Once I found out Eli Manning was benched, I couldn't
believe it.
Bench a two-time World
Super Bowl champion that's been grinding for that organization since 2004.
A quiet professional. The New York
Giants fans should be outraged.
Putting
Geno Smith is like putting Parody Larry into the smack-off.
Ridiculous.
I hope Eli Manning
goes to another team, Rome,
and wins the Super Bowl, Josh. And during the celebration, when they throw that mic in his face, he's not going to thank Papa John's. He's going to ask the Giants how his ass tastes. Unwar the Giants organization.
Talk up a deuce and drop the mic. Unwar the Giants organization.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
Not hey, Josh, since I ended your call, let me go ahead and finish that call the way you were going to finish that call. Jim, this call, give this call an A, and I'll pay some shipping and handling on a golden ticket. Rack me, I'm out. Now, you might wonder if I have ESP, or you might wonder if I have some other special power. How is it that I could do that guy's call over him doing his own call? You might wonder why that is. Like, damn, Rome, I thought you were good. I had no idea you were that good. And the answer is, I'm not that good. The answer is, the guy emails us his call before he makes his call. That's how I knew where he was going with that call. That's how I could match him word for word. So, like, this is Josh's tact. Josh's strategy is, I'm going to send them my call before I make that call, and then they'll read it and they'll think, damn, I'm smart. They'll put me on for sure. It actually works in reverse, Josh. I know your call is not going to be very good, but then when I see your script of the call, it's even worse than I thought, and that's why we never take your call. So you're not helping them, you're hurting them, and you shouldn't be emailing me your call before you make it, man. Roosevelt Nix is my guest. Roosevelt, so good to have you on. How are you?
Well, thanks for having me. I'm good. You?
I'm great. Really nice to talk to you. Now, you're coming off a game on Sunday night where Le'Veon Bell had 20 carries for 95 yards. He had 12 receptions for 88 yards, and he calls you, quote, the best fullback in the world, end quote. And the two of you seem to have this amazing chemistry on the field. How would you describe that relationship with him and you?
Le'Veon, that's my boy. No question. We've known each other for a while now. Just a little bit deeper than football. We actually from the same area, so we've known each other since Little League. But you know, like he called me that, I call him the best in the world too. So that's just how we rock.
That's it. You know, there was that thought, and this is really interesting to me, the thought that the fullback had been phased out of football completely, but you're still getting it done. How much pride do you take in being a fullback in an era when the fullback was supposedly dead?
I mean, people do say that. Honestly, they do. But, I mean, every team has one, and it's a factor. We got one job, and we come in the game, you know. It's chances are everybody else knows what's going on too. So it's a different position. They take a different type of dude.
That's exactly what it is. That's really well said. It's a different position that takes a different type of dude and a different mindset. As an example, being a fullback means you're not going to get a ton of carries or receptions. In fact, as I'm looking at your stats right now, you don't have any carries or receptions this year. So how would you describe the mindset necessary to be a fullback?
We got so much going on our offense. I'd rather have them guys have the ball anyway. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I mean, if my job is to block, that's my job, and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. You see what happens when we get the ball in the right people's hands. So I'm just glad to be a part of something so great.
Roosevelt Nix joining us. Listen, you've had an amazing journey to this point. So let me go back a little bit for those who are not familiar with your story. You were an all-conference defensive lineman at Kent State. So as your time there was wrapping up, what kind of thoughts were you having about the NFL?
I always wanted to play in the league, but kind of hit me that, you know, I ain't going to be playing defensive line in the NFL, or, you know, I wouldn't really be the best guy for that position. Just seeing how my size and, you know, and all that. Well, that's what they say. But I just was kind of a little heavy, so I just kind of took it upon myself to start losing weight. I figured I'd get a chance to play linebacker somewhere, get a shot at linebacker. And I've always been athletic, so I was like, why not give it a shot? Started losing some weight, started training. Ended up getting down to about 245, 240. Tried to do some linebacker stuff, but, just switched to fullback. They switched me up to my pro day, did some fullback drills, and that was all she wrote.
All right, so what was that like? For instance, in 2014, you were with the Atlanta Falcons, and you were looking to make that team as a fullback, and that's a position that you had never, ever played up until that point. So what was the transition like from D-line to fullback?
Oh, I mean, them couple weeks before during training camp was pretty stressful. My first time ever learning the offensive playbook, just so happened to be an NFL playbook. So you can only imagine how difficult that was. Just simply not knowing some of the stuff. But here at Pittsburgh, my coaching staff and my coach has done a phenomenal job at just, you know, taking that extra time to teach me some stuff that I may or may not have known. You know, this is my third year playing offense, so I still learn stuff every day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, for you to learn an NFL playbook offensively for the first time, that's challenging enough. But even going back to that point, what's even more stressful, or the stress on top of the stress, is the fact that the Falcons that year were featured on Hard Knocks. So when you were released, it was captured on camera. So then what's it like to not only go through the stress of being released, but to know that people like your mother were going to see it?
Oh, yeah, I mean, it was cool. It was all fun and cool when you, like, hey, we're going to be on Hard Knocks. I'm going to make the team. I'm going to be on Hard Knocks. My story's going to get shown. But, you know, you never think about, hey, well, you also can get cut on Hard Knocks. Mm. So when I got cut, obviously, you know, people knew, and it was, you know, talked about. But my mom seen the episode where I got cut, and that just really hurt her. I haven't watched the show since, but, you know, That was a rough time, just knowing that I had been told no in front of everybody. You know what I mean? So it was kind of difficult, but, you know, you got to persevere through and, you know, keep your head down and work.
Dude, that's so true. Like, you said that great, that I was told no, but everybody saw it. So then the story goes, you keep your head down and you're trying to figure out what to do next. Roosevelt Nix is my guest. And the story goes that you gave some thought to the Columbus Police Academy, some thought to the Arena League, and you spent some time as a teaching assistant at your old high school. So what was that time like?
Oh, yeah. I ended up, my old athletic director ended up getting me a job being a substitute teacher. So I did all the things I needed to do for that. And so I was a substitute for about half the year until the season was over. I got the chance to work out. And, you know, it was just difficult working and then, you know, still having this dream of playing in the league but not knowing if I'd ever get the call. And, you know, everybody knows people that still work out and don't know if they're ever going to get that call again. And I always just kept the faith, and I got that call from Coach Tomlin and the Steelers about potentially playing linebacker again. And I took that opportunity.
Hey, tell me about the call. January 2015, you get the call from the Steelers. What do you remember about the call, and what kind of emotions were you feeling when you got that call?
I was kind of just like, wow, like I really had been waiting and I finally got it. But they called me and said, hey, you in shape? I said, yeah. And it was like, we want to try you out at linebacker. And I said, all right, let's do it. I was on a flight to Pittsburgh and worked out as linebacker. They told me they was going to sign me, I did linebacker for about 2 weeks, 3 weeks, maybe not even 2 weeks probably. And then Coach T was like, hey, man, I want to try you at fullback. I'm like, oh, man, here we go again.
Here we go again.
But, I mean, you know, at this point, I'm like, whatever, make it work. You know what I mean? And once I got the opportunity, I knew I wasn't going to let it go again. And he said he wanted me to play fullback, so I said, let's do it. And then went in the training camp as a fullback, and that's all she wrote.
Yeah, and then you get word that you officially made that 53-man roster. What was it like to receive word that you were officially a member of that team?
Oh, that in itself was just a blessing. And, you know, I just want to thank my family for being there and me and being there for me during that time, because it was a dark place. And, you know, having another opportunity to play this game at this level, it was just truly a blessing and something that I won't never forget.
Now, you scored a touchdown in high school. You also scored in college. You're still looking for that first touch in the NFL. Any idea what it's going to feel like the first time you get into the end zone in an NFL game?
Oh, I'm going to be charged up. I don't know what type of celebration yet, seeing we get to do all these celebrations, but I'll probably bring Juju and Le'Veon along. And we'll see what goes down.
Yeah, Rez, what's it like having those guys, Juju, Le'Veon, Antonio Brown, to me is incredible. I'm not sure I've seen a better receiver in the last 20 years in that league. You got guys with absolutely unbelievable skill, obviously tremendous charisma too. What's it like having skill guys like that on that team?
Oh, I mean, it's a workplace that you wouldn't trade anything else for. You know, you got people, you got starting with Big Ben, he's throwing the ball to ABs, making great catches. You got this young guy, Juju, running around doing all kind of wild stuff. Being him, you know, you got the defensive guys going crazy. It's really truly a place like no other. And, you know, it's just a fun place to be. It's a good workplace where we get business done and we work hard to be where we're at.
You know, I've talked to a lot of Steelers over the years, and guys always talk about that, what it means to work there, what it means to play for that team, what it means to live and work in that town. Now, before I let you go, this weekend you're repping American Football Without Barriers as the cause on your cleats. Can you lay that out for us? What is American Football Without Barriers about, and why is that something that's so important to you?
American Football Without Barriers is a nonprofit that D'Angelo Williams put me on to. It's actually his nonprofit. Last year, he was telling me about they've been traveling for years to other countries all over the world, teaching American football to all these other countries, to the youth, the women, the men, everybody, you know, that wants to learn about this sport. They've been going to these countries and giving that real NFL direction, you know, tips and tricks, where some places may not have it, may only be able to watch it and try to imitate it, or maybe just simply don't have the right resources to learn what needs to be learned. You know what I mean? So last year was my first time going. We went to Finland, and we held three camps there where we taught the youth. We had a women's camp, we had a men's camp, and a youth camp. And it's just good to get out to those other countries, travel to those other countries where people really look up to the sport and really want to learn the right and proper ways and be taught the right ways to play football. So it was kind of a cool thing for me, and I'm kind of locked in for, you know, wherever we go next. And that's something I want to be a part about, teaching a proper way to play football.
Welcome to Jungle. What's cracking? A tremendous Monday to you. Hope you had a great holiday weekend. Nice to be back. Have a monumental week for us here. It is our last few days in this studio. The move may not mean very much to you, but we have been here for the better part of a decade plus, so it's a very big week for us.
Let me ask you this. How was your Thanksgiving weekend?
Because
college football's weekend was pretty much insane.
Yeah! Hard to know which look is worse, hiring Shiano or bailing on him when social media erupted. There are plenty of reasons not to hire Greg Schiano, but if you're going to do it the right way, and that was all wrong. Andy Staples is back.
When you do have a serious candidate, if you don't think he's a slam dunk, Greg Schiano was not going to be considered a slam dunk hire. You floated out there just to test it, and it didn't test.
His ankles. Oh, we have a fight on the other side.
Spit in somebody's face, that's a reason to go. You insult somebody's race or religion, that's a reason. reason to go.
And wearing a chain in an NFL game is a reason to go, or at least it is if you're Aqib Talib.
One of the rare sequels that lived up to the original.
Phillip Rivers.
It wasn't one of those, man, we're terrible, man. I don't know if we're going to win a game. It was, if we can find a way to win one game, then we know what we're capable of doing. We can get hot.
So they had me up there in the corner of this restaurant doing a show, and they didn't tell anybody, and they didn't set it up. And I'm there like an idiot in the corner, and I can't even hear myself. It was a freaking disaster. Carlos Dansby is my guest.
Yeah, my cup is never full. I'm always learning, finding new ways to do things, and that's what I've been able to do. That's what separates me from everybody else. I've been able to evolve.
Are you sure you want to do it?
So I said, and I told Foxy I would do this, and jumped the shark.
For the record, one of my favorite days ever. When the trash sticker on the microwave oven cracks me up.
Totally trash.
Where do you dispose of the most disgusting microwave ever? Yeah, whatever we're paying those movers is not nearly enough. Oh, but don't mind me, I'll stick my lunch in it.
And I know you will see what's meant to be, and I was meant to.
We're going to end the era and this studio with a Nas reference in a Jewel parody. We've got new digs. We've got a brand new crib. We have a brand new studio. And it feels great to be home. And this right here, you know what this is? The first tongue on the mic.
Bench the
Benching
salt.
Eli Manning so you can, quote, evaluate Geno Smith is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. Saying that you have to even evaluate Geno Smith is bull.
So we want to go take a look about the
You need to evaluate Smith. He's terrible. There's your evaluation.
Quarterback purgatory.
Chris Mack.
If you can't make the effort to go to your local Kmart or King Quick or something to get some candy and pass out to the kids, man, I'll tell you, you got to be a miser if you're handing out pennies on Halloween, you know.
Take telephone calls with a brand new bit of software.
So the software appears to be working flawlessly at this point.
Okay, JB, you're up.
Just wanted to be the first caller at the new crib.
And now you're not. Now you're on. Now, goodbye. Dana White joins us again for a few moments. Oscar De La Hoya. Now he says he's willing to fight McGregor.
The nuttiest whack job on earth. This guy, I don't know if this guy is hitting the yayo and the booze again or what his deal is, but this guy is on another planet. This guy is a complete nut.
Email.
Been listening for as long as I can remember. We all know that change sucks, even if it's an upgrade. Way to not miss a damn beat. Smooth like butter,
thank
baby.
You.
The golf course.
Stop it, all of you. That includes you, Hawk. That includes you too, Arnold. Let me do you all a favor. Santa is not real. Neither is the Easter Bunny. Neither is the Tooth Fairy. And until proving otherwise, neither is Tiger.
Tiger! All we want, one more hit of that drug. That is Tiger Woods.
But I'm not sure that Hawk knows that they make vegetarian pockets now for those who don't want to eat meat but still want explosive diarrhea.
Rex, it's disgusting. I'm a pro. I'm running a pro shop here.
Email.
Diarrhea is the great equalizer. I don't know, Drew. I just frankly don't ever remember saying that.
Diarrhea doesn't care who the hell you are. It's coming. He doesn't care who you are or what you do.
Hey, anyway, what's poppin', Twitter? Alvin, come on, man.
Rome, we all know you don't root for anything but a story. But Rome, I woke up this morning from my certain mattress.
Well, you've been banned for life. Don't ever call this show ever again. Zay Jones is my guest. You hit the ground, and then you seem to magically levitate off of it and back onto your feet. The internet absolutely freaked out at that point.
Everyone is compared to a video game like I'm Possessed or like this looks crazy.
Go crazy now!
He's not going to thank Papa John's. He's going to ask the Giants how his ass tastes. Unwar the Giants organization.
Giants organization.
If that doesn't help you get through your grind, check your pulse.
I'm also glad that badass Jerry Jones wasn't slamming hot dogs in his geriatric grill.
Any idea what it's going to feel like the first time you get into the end zone?
I'm going to be charged up. I don't know what type of celebration yet. I'll probably bring Juju and Le'Veon along.
So what? He grabbed his jump.
I don't know that I've ever racked a call.
Accidental shooting.
Conk in Germany.
Where's the loyalty to the program?
Abscessed toenails.
Unwore people who don't wear Matt in L.A.
Shout out to my cousin.
The great equalizer. How you like me now, James Fenton?
But I got to go. Oh, my man, sorry. Bye.
KTK. Day number three in the new crib. And today, my friend, was a damn good day. James, John, Kelly.
Good night now.
That's it for the Daily Jungle. Have an awesome weekend. And make sure you check out the NFL on CBS on Sunday. I will be there noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. And then I'll see you right back here on Monday. We are out.